It impacts our spiritual well-being, our in terms of our mitzvos and averus, in terms of our neshama, to make sure we always want to know we're doing the right thing, klape shmaya, but also the mistakes that are made here have very real impact on human happiness and on the happiness of those who we care about the most in both directions. And we're making lots of mistakes. This is not an area where it's simple to navigate. And there are lots of mistakes that are made. And it's crucial to try to appreciate a little bit of what we are trying to work with. And the area of Lashon Hara in general is one where, for the most part, people do the exact opposite of what they're supposed to do. No offense to people. Because, in general, when it comes to Lashon Hara, so we're not supposed to say bad things about people, unless there is an important purpose. So what usually happens is we do the exact opposite. That we're often not as careful as we should be, as the Gemara says, of a kulan va'avak lashon hara, that at least when it comes to some form of lashon hara, we're all nichshal occasionally. It's hard to really avoid lashon hara, so we all do it at some point. But we get more concerned once it may actually affect something important. And that's understandable, because we don't want to do damage to something that is important. But that's where we may need to speak up. So that's the area where, yes, it's understandable that we're careful, but that's where we may actually have a requirement to be speaking. So essentially, it plays out that we're doing the opposite of what we should be doing, that we're often speaking Lashon Hara with no justification at all. And when there might be a justification, that's when we're very scared, we don't want to say anything, we don't want to fershter a shidduch. So that's a concern. And when it comes to the area of shidduchim, so this is where you find this paradox, if you want to call it that, playing out most powerfully. Because, again, people say things all the time that they really should not be saying. And we'll talk about that probably more the second time. That people say things in the area of shidduchim that they assume are justified and are, I think, in my opinion, the primary example of Lashon Hara in the most harmful way that we have in our circles. And they're holding back from saying things that they're obligated to say. And this tremendous pain that is being caused by both kinds of mistakes. And there are disastrous marriages that happen causing great pain to both parties, great pain to entire families, to entire communities, to children, because people didn't speak up when they're supposed to speak up. And there is also great pain happening because there are people who are not getting dates and who are not finding people interested in them because of genuine Lashon Hara, which has no warrant or justification whatsoever. And in ways that nobody should have any havminas justified, and yet it's taking place very casually. So this is an area where not only are our neshamas on the line, and our neshamas very much are on the line, but also just very observable aspects of human happiness with real-world results that we can see in front of our eyes are very much affected. So it's important to try to appreciate some of the parameters of what we're talking about. So today I'll try to say some principles. And again, for those of you coming in, I was told that the time frame is about 35, 40 minutes. It'll go till about 12:40. And we have today and Wednesday. So we'll try today to say some basic klalim and get into some of the more pointed details on Wednesday. And there will be many of them. There are many pointed details that are very relevant to how we live our lives. And I was asked, I know at least one person in here, a few people here may be married. This is relevant very much to married people also, because it's a question, married people are constantly consulted about this, and as they should be, because married people very appropriately want to be helpful to others and to share their happiness and to help others quickly find their Basheret. And so therefore, this topic is extremely relevant to them as well. So the truth is, when it comes to Lashon Hara, there are many, many details, as we know, many, many Sfarim that have been written, and the Chafetz Chaim created a revolution in writing down principles and making it a topic of attention. And in the century or so since he did that, there's been an explosion of writing about it. And I don't think it's the case, like some suggest, that the Chafetz Chaim invented Lashon Hara as a halachic topic. It was always a halachic topic with many psukim in the Chumash, and including this past week's Parsha, included among them. If we, it might have some relevance. We'll see if we have time to mention that. But the idea that Lashon Hara is not simply a Musar value or a Midas Tzadikim or some kind of vague concept, but it's an actual halacha with details, is one that's clear from the Chumash. It's clear from Shas in many sugyas. It was clear from the Rishonim. It's clear from the Rambam, who codifies it in Mishneh Torah. It's clear from Rashi and Tosfos and other Rishonim, who paskin sugyas in Maseches Erechin and Maseches Shabbos and Maseches Nida, where there are practical gemaras about this. So there are many, many details in Hilchos Lashon Hara, but very often what it comes down to is a clash in terms of trying to figure out one basic issue. Is it l'toeles or not? That if what we're saying is purposeful and necessary, so then it is an obligation. And if what we're saying is not necessary and it's negative and it's not important for anybody, so then it is prohibited. So that, there's a lumdus, which, you know, we're not here necessarily to talk lumdus in these topics, but it's just helpful to understand a little bit how that plays a role. That there is a question, what exactly is the nature of the justification of toelis? And it helps us to understand a little bit the framework of what we're talking about. So is it that Lashon Hara is a midos issue, essentially, which is not at odds with what you said a few minutes ago? It could be a midos issue that expresses itself in halacha, but essentially it's about the midah of not being a gossip, not engaging in the negative conversations about people, and not having that attribute of negativity. In which case, the heter of toelis is actually very broad. The heter of toelis is that as long as it's purposeful, it's not gossip. That the definition of the midah of Lashon Hara is gossip for its own sake, talking about negativity for the sake of negativity. And as long as there is some purpose to it, so then it's not going to be gossip. And that could be suggested by the pasuk in this past week's Kriyas HaTorah. That's how some understood. That if you want to talk about what the source is for the Issur Lashon Hara, there's actually a number of candidates. Very often we point to the pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim, "Lo'seilech Rachel bi'amecha." We should not walk around as a talebearer. But there's a pasuk we read this past Shabbos, "Lo'sisa Hashem Hashav." We should not bear a report that is shav. So figure out what that word means in a second. And the Gemara in the Maseches Pesachim, in the end of Pesachim, the Gemara says that that is the Azhara to Makabel Lashon Hara, the prohibition to receive Lashon Hara is derived from that pasuk. And the Gemara has an opinion that may also be the source for the Isser to transmit Lashon Hara. We'll see so shema shav. So what does the word shav mean? So one possible interpretation is that it means worthless and vain, like taking God's name, l'shav. So if that's the case, what the pasuk means is you should not accept a report that's negative for nothing. If it's l'shav, if it's just gossip, if people are just talking about somebody for no purpose, but if it's important, if it affects people, so then that's a different story. So that pasuk may illustrate the whole nature of the toelis idea. Alternatively, There are those who understand it differently. And those who understand that Lashon Hara is really about the harm that comes to people from speaking about them. And the recognition that it's very hard to get an accurate picture of somebody based on any one fact that you may know, even if that fact is true, and even if that fact is otherwise objective. And so when you say negative information about somebody, you are very often placing that person at risk of being harmed in a way that is not warranted, is not fair. And therefore, in general, we have to be careful not to do that. However, we also have a competing value. What is that competing value? Torah also tells us, "Losamod al dam reacha," that we're not allowed to stand idly by when somebody is at risk. So if somebody might be harmed by someone else, so then we have to save them from that harm. So that might mean that we have to speak up and we have to prevent them from undergoing that harm. And even though you might translate that pasuk al dam reacha, it means they're going to be killed, but as the Rambam makes clear in Sefer HaMitzvos, it doesn't just mean harm of death, risk of death, but it means any kind or any degree of harm, whether it's spiritual, material, or physical. If anybody is at risk of being harmed, so then it's your obligation to save them from that. So then it could be that we have a values clash. That it's not that it's not Lashon Hara when it's Toelis. Maybe it is Lashon Hara. But that Lashon Hara is outweighed by the mandate to save someone from harm. The two principles are up against each other, and we have to make a judgment as to how to navigate the path between them. So we have, on the one hand, Lo Seilech Rachel B'Amecha as a value, don't speak Lashon Hara. And we have, on the other hand, the value of Lo Samor Al Dam Re'echa, don't allow people to be harmed. And they're taken in balance with each other. And what is an indication that these two are sometimes meant to be taken as one balance, taken together as one thought? They're right next to each other. Two halves of the same pasuk in Parshas Kedoshim. Those are together in the same pasuk and the same verse. On the one hand, one could read it that way. The Rambam has a different reading of that pasuk. You could read it that way, that yes, generally don't speak badly about people, but on the other hand, you can't stand idly by if somebody is at risk, so therefore you have to speak up. So those are two different frameworks to understand Toelis. And again, this is really the central issue in Hilchos Lashon Hara. There's a world of details to know, but the central issue is, how do you navigate that balance between not saying what is unjustly harmful and which can cause a problem that's not warranted, and between not staying silent when your silence can allow somebody to undergo tremendous suffering because of what they don't know. And the two, from a lamdasha perspective, the frameworks make a big difference, because if you believe that Lashon Hara is really guided as a midah, and that the issue is Toelis is not Lashon Hara at all, it's outside the definition. So then the process for figuring out what is Lashon Hara and what isn't is more straightforward. It's basically a one-question test. Is this purposeful or is it not? And that's how the Chazon Ish is quoted as understanding. Is it a purposeful comment? Is this something I'm saying with noble focus, or is it gossip? But if you take the second perspective, that it's Lashon Hara no matter what, it's just outweighed by the issue of not allowing the innocent to be victimized, so then it's a trickier process, because we are overriding a Torah prohibition, and we are allowing the person we're talking about to be subject to harm. And that's not a small thing. So the process is going to be more rigorous. And the Chafetz Chaim, you might be familiar with, the Chafetz Chaim has a whole list of questions that one has to consider before saying something that is purposeful. It's between 5 and 7 questions. He has it different ways in different places in the Sefer. And that's a different perspective that if you're overriding a Torah prohibition, so then it's a more rigorous kind of procedure to go through in order to get to that. And it's difficult. There are some who, we're not going to be able to go into all the details, but there are some who objected to some of the details of the Chafetz Chaim, because if we're talking about protecting the innocent, you're not going to always be able to satisfy all 7 or 5 of these questions. And what's the alternative? So then you'll let the innocent suffer because you can't address all of these concerns? That can't be. If somebody's at risk and you need to save them, do you need to save them even if you can't satisfy all of these criteria? So it could be there is a path in the middle. And so, for example, Shraya Dublitsky, Zichr Tzadik Livracha, who passed away last year, was a great tzaddik from Bnei Brak, who was particularly careful in the area of Lashon Hara. He had a sign up in his house. He had spoken Lashon Hara for many, many decades. And he wrote a haskama to a sefer, which was all about one of the details of the Chafetz Chaim's list, one of the more controversial details, which maybe we'll talk about if we have time. And in the Haskamah, Dublitsky wrote, as far as I understood him, that the Chafetz Chaim's list is not absolute, but it's basically a checklist of what you have to try to go through to do the best you can, to see, make sure, make every effort you can to have satisfied everything on his list. And then if you can't, you may still need to speak, if that's the only possible way of saving someone from harm. But minimize the harm to the person you're talking about. So ideally, you will try to satisfy that list to the best of your ability. Okay, so far, so good? Everything makes sense so far? Okay, so we'll try to get into now some of the details, but there's an added aspect. So the issue of toelis could come up in all kinds of ways and all kinds of areas of life. One of the differences between the two models is that if we talk about Lo Samar Al Dam Re'acha as being the basis for it, so then we're basically talking about a preventing harm model. Maybe we're talking about somebody who is a predator, or somebody who poses some kind of risk to someone. While if we're talking more about the first model and just avoiding the shav, just avoiding it being needless gossip, so then there's a much broader based license just to improve situations, don't necessarily involve impending doom, impending harm to anyone. But nonetheless, there are all kinds of areas in which this comes up. It comes up in many different parts of life. But as the Chafetz Chaim notes, the areas where it's most prominently relevant are marriage and business. Somebody's about to enter into a business partnership with somebody who might be dishonest, or somebody's about to enter into a marriage that might be difficult for them, so, or appropriate for them. So these are the areas where it's most relevant. But on top of all that, so marriage has a added component, which makes it probably the most complex area in Hilchos Lashon Hara, because there's a whole added aspect which isn't relevant in the other areas. So anytime you're trying to figure out toelis, it's a very, very delicate balance, and you always run the risk of possibly harming the person you're talking about if you say too much, and letting someone innocent be harmed if you say too little. So it's always tricky. But with marriage, there's a whole added component. What is that? Timing. It's really the only area in life, pretty much, for the most part, where timing is a key consideration. Because there are certain aspects about what needs to be discussed and what needs to be revealed that have to be calibrated to a certain stage in a relationship. Because there are certain things which are so blatant and huge that somebody's going to want to know before they ever meet a person. But very often, that's not what we're talking about. And very often, there are things that need to be revealed before somebody enters into a marriage with someone, but not necessarily before they ever meet in the first place. And that's a very delicate balance. Because, just to clarify, we say Lo Samad Al Dam Re'echa here. So what are we trying to save the victim from? Right? It's important to clarify. So most of all, we're trying to save them from a bad marriage, or especially a dangerous marriage. But really, any kind of a bad, unsuccessful marriage, we're trying to save them from. That's the absolute. So for somebody who's dating and to enter into a marriage when concealing something from the other party, you know, there are some people here in the room who are in a business halacha class. I think we've talked a little bit about this in the context of onah, the parallels it has to business and mekach tos. So for somebody to conceal something from somebody they're proposing to, somebody they're about to enter into marriage with, a detail that had they known this detail, they never would have married them. So that is severely problematic. That creates even the possibility of mekach tos, even invalidating the whole thing, but it's certainly a prohibition to enter into an arrangement like that. And that's where there's a burden put on a third party to also save somebody from that kind of situation. So that, most of all, is what we want to prevent. Hi.
So if someone were to fail in that respect from being careful about Lo Samad, would they also be violating Lifnei Iver?
Yeah, Lifnei Iver for sure also. Lifnei Iver is related too. That we assume that Lifnei Iver, one of the interpretations of Lifnei Iver, Lo Sitein Michshol, is giving somebody bad advice. And so presumably if you're actively counseling somebody in a way that's bad for them, that's for sure a violation of Lifnei Iver. If you fail to point out something, then you're not saying anything at all. Presumably it's also a violation of Lifnei Iver. There's a whole sefer you can find in the library called Mitzvah Sa'itza, Rabbi Yosef Epstein, where he discusses how Lifnei Iver presumably also creates an obligation of positive advice also. But yeah, there's a lot that one could trip over as far as this is concerned. Hi.
So just to clarify, so someone who's giving advice to someone who's considered going out with someone, it would be like a cross or not the same thing? In a specific situation?
So you asked about the person dating or somebody else?
Yeah, no, like if you were to talk about someone else who's considering being...
So the question is, if what we're going to have to get into details, which are going to get much more complex, but the broad issue is that if somebody is about to marry somebody, and there's a detail about that person that if they knew that detail, they wouldn't do it, and you knew that detail, then that's where you're obligated to reveal that detail.
This is by the time they're already getting
married. So that's what we're trying to clarify here. That saying the most egregious problem would be they're about to enter into a marriage not knowing something that would impact their decision. You know it, and they don't. That's where you have a blatant Lo Samad Al Dam Re'echa. So we know for sure we want to save them from that. We want to save them from entering into a marriage that will be disastrous for them. Now, hi.
What's the answer for the person keeping the secret?
I mean, let's say for a third party?
No.
For the dater?
The
dater is certainly no better than the third party, right. But that person is also committing an act of onah, committing a transaction under false pretenses, and everything else they're going to be doing wrong for the rest of their married life, which is we've seen many horrific impacts. Nowadays, you know, it's tied in with so many other societal issues. And ironically, it's really ironic because you see what a bad cheshbon it is to hold back sometimes on these things. Because there's no safe side, so you have to really be careful. But hold back when you shouldn't hold back, so you think you're being a tzaddik as far as Lashon Hara is concerned. So not only are you not being a tzaddik because you're obligated to say what's necessary, but also as somebody who's involved with aguna situations, I can tell you also that when you have the result of people not knowing what they're getting into, and you have a protracted divorce situation, and it's unresolved for a long time. In l'cha lashon hara gadol mizeh, right? There's no greater lashon hara than when now the entire community feels they all have to be involved in their divorce. So in order to, you're trying to save yourself from a little bit of lashon hara at the beginning, it's not only that you violate los amod, but the lashon hara that will emerge from that is astronomical. So we know we want to save a bad marriage. And presumably there are other lesser consequences that we also want to save someone from. So if you warn somebody right before the wedding, so then they have to undergo a broken engagement. So a broken engagement is better than a bad marriage and all the things that can come with that, but it's still not nothing. So we also certainly want to save somebody from having to go that far. So presumably it's a lesser cost, but it's a significant cost too. So we don't want to only save someone from a bad marriage, we also want to save them from a bad engagement. So presumably with its calibrated level, we want to also tell somebody before they reach that stage. Okay, so they'll say fine, but it's not just engagement and all the consequences that come along with that, with the investment of publicity and embarrassment, and there's a whole history of how halacha related to broken engagements because of all the embarrassment that came along with that. So that's certainly not a small matter by itself. But you'll say before that also, but what about the investment of emotion and time and money that goes into a relationship before that? So yes, that's also significant, but you know, it clearly gets less and less as we go earlier in the stage. And the problem is, and I'll say more about this probably next time, that there is a point where for most issues it's too early. And if there's very, very blatant problems, maybe it's never too early to reveal, but for a lot of what's maybe relevant, there is a stage where it's too early. And many poskim have an expression that there are certain things which, and maybe a lot of what's relevant here might fall into this basket, where they should only be revealed at a certain stage. Because too early, and let's say in our circles, let's say especially before you even get a chance to meet the other person. So the expression you find in some poskim is, at that stage, kol davar katan mekalkel, that any small matter is going to mess things up. And before you even meet another person and you hear about some small issue, so often your attitude will be, okay, especially as we know, the reality is that the guys often have more options than the girls have. You hear the complaint very often. So the guy is considering a number of girls he could be going out with, and so he hears about some detail, and he thinks, what, she's not perfect, so I'm perfect. So why should I go out with somebody who's not perfect? Like, there's all these perfect people I can go out with. So the truth is, no offense, but you're not perfect. And the other girls on your list are also not perfect. But you happen to hear this one imperfect detail about this one, so it's going to be a very disproportionate impact. So there are many such things that Moshe Feinstein and others write that it's only appropriate that you get to meet the person first and get a little bit of a sense of what the person is like in the broader context. And then whatever this information is, you'll be able to have a sense of how it fits into the larger picture. So that whole progression, I just said backwards, things that have to be revealed before the marriage for sure, before engagement for sure, you know, before there's a major personal cost. But still, there is a point where it's too early, because if it's too early, then many people who could have been very happily married and both parties would have been very happy will instead never meet. And that's also going to be very unfortunate. And of course, the guideline of everything, you know, Klal Gadol BaTorah, is V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. So you think, okay, it's a pretty simple life. Just live according to V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. Not so simple at all. Nothing simple. Right? So even living by V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha is not so simple for a lot of reasons. Because first of all, here you're dealing with two parties. So hopefully you relate to both of them with a sense of V'ahavta L'Reicha Kamocha. You want the best for both parties. So that's a part of it. But even if you were to just focus on one party, on the boy or the girl or either one, and say, I'm going to focus on looking for the best for them. So very often, not hearing something too early is also in their interest, because there are many, many happily married people who are incredibly grateful that there are things that they didn't find out till later, because had they heard about them before they were introduced, they wouldn't have gone out in the first place. It wasn't one of the 100 things on their list that they had prepared. And they are deliriously happy that they married this person and that they didn't know not to go out with them because they didn't know about this aspect. So it's a very careful balance, because these things have to be revealed, but they have to be revealed at the right time, because too early, cold lover caught in the calcal, but too late, it could be a very significant investment of time, emotion, energy, and everything else. And maybe too far along to even stop something that should have been stopped. And that's all a serious consequence. So it's a very careful balance. And that's an added element here, which is not present in other areas of life. You know, when it comes to business, if somebody's about to enter into, it could apply also, but it's not on the same level of intensity. So it's a careful cheshbon. So, for example, this complicates things tremendously. And nothing's going to make it simpler other than just sensitizing yourself to all of the consequences and trying to be aware of all of the pitfalls in every corner. But what complicates things tremendously is there are certain things, if you're consulted as a third party, so there are certain things that you need to reveal. But the best is if the party himself or herself reveals it. But you may not know where they're holding along the process, and maybe they've gone out 3 times and he plans on revealing it on the 4th date. And it's much better if he reveals it than if you reveal it, for the whole health of the relationship, as long as it's going to be fully forthcoming. So to be able to figure out how that plays out is tricky. It takes a lot of chachma to know how to do that. And of course, part of the complication is that there are different segments of the Jewish community with different protocols as far as how things progress. So let's say, for example, we're going to talk about 3 dates. So in some segments of the Jewish community, by 3 dates, they're already engaged. No joke, right? In some segments of the community, 3 dates means a very serious progression into where things are now more serious and parents are involved and they're moving to another level. And in some segments of the community, 3 dates, you're barely getting started. So having a sense of where the parties are coming from and where all this plays in, said I'm not making things any easier here, it just adds another level of complexity. Hi.
What happens if, let's say that Ruben is dating someone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't work out. Is Shimon going to ask Ruben, why didn't it work out?
That's a very important question. That's one of the details I want to get to on Wednesday, God willing. And it's a major, major issue that impacts how we interact with each other. So if we come back on Wednesday, we'll try to talk about that. We're not up to that stage yet. We're still hoping things are going to work out.
What type of information are we talking about?
So there's many types. So we have about 5 more minutes today. Let's try to put some things on the table. I probably won't allow for much detail, but we'll pick up from there, God willing, on Wednesday. So let's just say a few more minutes now with this basic framework. So Chafetz Chaim has a couple of details and parameters which I think are very helpful for us. His specific examples may or may not be so relatable for us, but the categories are, I think, helpful for us. And again, we'll go into more about it on Wednesday. So what are his klalim? So he's dealing with what somebody should volunteer first. He works off the premise, and this we'll have to discuss more on Wednesday, that somebody who's looking into a shidduch has the right to ask anything they want, and that you are obligated to answer honestly. I think there are huge details that need to be clarified about that, so definitely wait till Wednesday for that. But what he's first addressing is, what do you volunteer? It's not, they haven't asked a specific question. What do you volunteer about someone? And to that, he has three categories. So one category is, if there's something that's really the kind of big problem that would bother most people. He talks about a major hashkafic issue, of kfira, as he puts it, or a major health issue. And there is voluminous literature about how to address the nuances of different kinds of health issues, as you can imagine. And we're certainly not going to have the time to go into the pratim about that, but there's a very extensive literature about different degrees of health considerations. But some are obviously far bigger than others. So Chafetz Chaim says, he just gives those as two examples of what he thinks are big issues that would be significant to most people. So something like that, so that you volunteer up front. The second category, which we will also expand upon greatly on Wednesday, and this is the big gray area, which I think we are very much at fault in, is he says, what you do not volunteer is subjective issues which may not impress you so much, but are not objective problems for people by necessity. So he gives an example. He says, let's say somebody is not so sophisticated, so he doesn't catch on to people's tricks. Just not such a sophisticated, sharp kind of guy. He's not a bad person. So he says, that's something that you don't volunteer. There's no reason to think that it's something that the other party cares about fundamentally. And if you look at the language of the Chafetz Chaim, and I want to expand again on this on Wednesday because we do this all the time, this is an area where you have huge problems of actual full-blown Lashon Hara in a very damaging sense. But that's one area where you shouldn't volunteer. And just because it's something that you're not so impressed with doesn't mean that it's relevant to anybody else. Hi.
So let's say he's like a Baal Teshuva and he was in high school or something. Is that something that's subjective or objective?
Very possibly subjective. It may depend on the community that you're dealing with. And the whole question of how calling somebody a Baal Teshuva is termed is something that's very dependent on the community and the society that you're in, is you also find major differences in the... Yeah, that's something that has a lot of components to it, but it's something that may come up in other contexts anyway. But in general, something that like, oh, you know, I don't think they're so this, they're so that. I mean, just a spoiler alert, I mean, because I want to talk about this more on Wednesday, but I think this is one of the huge problems in our community. Huge, huge. Is that people take it upon themselves to assume they have nevuah, but this is what everyone does, this is a machla, and that they assume that they can assess people's personalities and who's going to get along with who, and they'll say, I don't see it. And they devastate relationships that way. And they hold back people who could be very happily married to each other by saying, yeah, I don't see it, because by the nevuah vested in me, by the Ribbono Shel Olam, which doesn't work in any other area of life, but here I know that they're not going to get along. And that's an absolute machla, and that's Lashon Hara Gomer. You have not a Navi, and to assess, if you know that people have incompatible values, it's one thing. But to say, yeah, I don't see their personalities clicking, I don't see it. Like, yes, you know, did it come in a chazon, in an aspaklaria hamira, aspashaina hamira? It's a tremendous harm, and that's the trend nowadays. It's disastrous. It's really, I don't know, people will put much more stock in their friends' nevuah than they do in all the real things that people are telling them, which is, don't have the right words for it. I'm in polite company. Yes?
There's no scenario in which that would be
appropriate?
Lashon Hara Gomer.
I think what I just described, like I said, if people have like really incompatible values, you know, somebody that, like, they believe in different life perspectives, then that's one thing. But to guess how people are going to get along, yeah, they're just making it up, and they poison relationships that way. That's Lashon Hara Gamar. And there's a lot more to it that we're going to talk about more on Wednesday, when we see it all the time.